So maybe first we should again define actually what the meaning of samskara is. So samskara, it's can be translated as an impression. Samskara specifically means very auspicious, very positive impression. Now, the question then would be, why actually doing samskara? What is the purpose of doing samskaras? What's the goal? So now we see that the Vedic scriptures, and we see also in Srila Prabhupada's writings, that samskaras are given a lot of stress, a lot of importance to perform. Now, these samskaras are important because they change the consciousness of the person if performed properly. And through that consciousness, then they develop the higher qualities. In Bhagavad Gita, Srila Prabhupada, then it's in the 16th chapter, and he specifically says that performing, that those who want the child, his child, and develop divine qualities, then they should perform the principles of human life. The principles of human life are the samskaras. He speaks a lot about samskara. Now, in Bhagavatam, a lot is mentioned in the case of Prahlad Maharaj. Then, specifically Garbhadharana samskara. We see that there is a lot also mentioned in how Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu was born. So in the case of Hiranyaksha, Hiranyakashipu, then Kashyapa Muni, then he was, at the time of the conception, he was a little angry. Because Diti, then she approached him, and it was not the right time. And because of that anger, then as he discharged the semen, then the consciousness was in it, and that happened, the conception, and this attracts the jiva of the same consciousness. So the consciousness of the parents, both parents combined at the time of the conception, then defines also which jiva is going to be attracted, which is attracted to the same consciousness. Mm-hmm. So it's we see another example, Anga Maharaj. Then Anga Maharaj, he was a great devotee. He was very Krishna conscious. Now, at the time of the conception, his wife actually then wasn't very Krishna conscious. No. And the consciousness of the wife was not right. Now, from that union, then came, it was Vena, King Vena. Now, he was very cruel. He was very, you cannot say that he was a good person. Now, Anga Maharaj, he tried to reform him. He tried to bring him up properly. And he was trying for 12 years. But after that, then he figured out that he will be not able to change the consciousness, change the character of his son. And then he was ready to leave. He left the kingdom and he renounced. He renounced everything and he became Vanaprastha sannyasi. Now, and another example, then we already mentioned Prahlad Maharaj. So then, as for the Prahlad Maharaj, then his father was a demon, right? But he was a demon who was very conscious of Vishnu. He was not positively necessarily conscious of Vishnu, but he was conscious of Vishnu nonetheless. So when he was then having union with his wife, he was very much conscious of Vishnu. And then because of that, his consciousness was carried with the semen, and when united with the egg, then the consciousness of them combined attracts the jiva of the same consciousness. Now, because it was Vishnu consciousness, so the jiva attracted was Prahlad Maharaj, who was a devotee. So, now, these are just some examples to understand a little bit the how the samskaras are working. Samskaras are not just rituals. We may see it like that. Yes, it's a ritual, but the ritual of the samskara, it's not successful if there is no change of consciousness. So this is to be understood, that the samskaras, if performed properly, there is a change of consciousness, and the consciousness affects the person. So if done for the child, then we are able to change something, change the consciousness, elevate the consciousness, and through that, the child can develop then a higher character, he can develop greater qualities. So now we will talk a little bit about then what actually affect, what do the samskaras do? We talked about that now they elevate the consciousness, they improve or elevate the character. But how does that translate into what needs to be done, or why is it done? So the purpose, why is that we want, as a devotees, having children, then we want our child to be Krishna conscious. We want him to be a devotee. So our consciousness, or the parents' consciousness, then should be also on Krishna. So then they attract the jiva who is attracted to the consciousness of the parents. And the samskaras, if done properly, they help the jiva to develop the, as Srila Prabhupada spoke about, the divine qualities. These divine qualities help the jiva to be properly elevated on the platform of goodness. So he will be able to be more focused. He will develop more determination. His behavior will be more steady. He will not necessarily be hyperactive. He will be just more capable of absorbing what the parents want to teach him. And because the parents are devotees, so then he will be, with his determination and focus, be able to absorb what actually is being given to him. So the samskaras itself, then they are not necessarily purely Krishna conscious. there is a lot of aspects in them. It's a focus on the child, but the samskaras help, they enable the child to be more receptive to Krishna consciousness. Which, if you look at it, this is one of the best investment you can give to the child. Now, so many people, they are making some accounts for the child, right? You know, saving money. So when he becomes big, then he has a lot of money. But what is he going to do with the money? That very much depends on the character. No, the child, no, then when adult, then he can use the money properly, no, in Krishna consciousness. He can use the money in sense gratification. Or maybe by the time he can already be, no, addicted to some drugs and then just waste all the money, no, on drugs. That depends on how he is brought up. Because now we need to educate the child. That's the responsibility of the parents, teachers, the king, right? The educators. Chanakya says, no, neither of them should, no, nobody should become a parent or a king or a teacher. No, if you cannot elevate your subjects, no, take them out of this material world. If you cannot elevate them to the spiritual world. So that's a great responsibility. No, we have to, you know, accept it. We have to very seriously accept it and then look at it. Okay, if I want to be a parent, that means a lot of responsibility. Because I have to teach the child such a way so then he will be able to apply his consciousness, you know, as a Krishna consciousness and be able to be elevated from this material world. If we don't teach the child that, then it's not complete. So, child, when he is born, he looks very cute, nice, everything, but the child is not necessarily innocent. It may appear like, but there are anarthas in the heart. Anarthas, then they are the seeds of desires. And they are there. When the child then reaches puberty, then these seeds of desires, they start coming up. Then, as they are coming up, then suddenly they start manifesting like attachments for sex, attachments for sense gratification. No, it can be anything. The anarthas are then considered as unwanted desires, and anarthas are created. We create anarthas. Vishwa Chakravarti Thakur, then he speaks in Madhura Kadambini, then he elaborates. Anarthas are created from four kinds of activities. So they are created from pious activities and sinful activities. Sinful activities, we understand. Okay, you do something wrong, then you get some reactions for that. But also from pious activities. If the pious activities are connected to the material world, then the attachments for being pious in the material world, it's also an anartha. Anartha, it's anything which connects us to the material world and makes us attached to the material world, and therefore not being able to get out of here. Then the third activity which creates anarthas, they are coming from devotional service. He describes as devotional service means while performing devotional service, out of ignorance, we commit a lot of sevaparat. So the sevaparat now is there, and again it creates the anartha. Now, and the fourth one, it's anartha which comes from namaparat. So he goes on describing that these anarthas, they get rooted in the heart and they stay there. If the anarthas are not properly, it's a seed, right? So you take a seed, and if you put a seed into the ground and put some water, then it sprouts. These anarthas are like that. They are there in the heart, we may not know about. Like a small child, he doesn't know about. But when the manifestation of the anarthas, or when we see like the field, the proper activity in which the anarthas can be addressed, they start growing. And growing anartha in the heart means that desire starts coming. So, an example. Now, for example, you may go on the street and then you go to some, next to some sweet shop. And in the sweet shop, then you see, now there is some sweet which you used to like a lot, or you like a lot. Now, what will be the reaction? Now, if we then now see, well, okay, it's not prashad. Don't worry about it. Just keep going. Okay? Then you are free of that. But what if that you start seeing, wow, look, this is really good. It looks really good. It's very nice. Maybe now I remember now how I used to have it, and then my mother was doing it. She did it very nicely, and it looks exactly the same. And then the desire for getting the sweet then keeps growing, keeps manifesting more and more. And if not careful, then what's going to happen? And he said, okay, just look like that, right? Nobody is around, nobody sees you, just go to the shop. No, you get it and eat it. The desire overcomes your good judgment. On the other hand, if the anartha is not there, then we don't have to worry about that we will be now overwhelmed by the desire, because one doesn't even notice it. The example can be as Shukadev Goswami. Now, you see, he was born a 16-year-old boy. So 16-year-old, he was very beautiful. Now, the bodily features were very beautiful, but he was born, and he didn't want to spend any time at home. So he ran away. After hearing Bhagavatam, he ran away. He didn't want to be connected to the material world at all. And as he runs, then there are some girls taking bath at the river. The girls were naked. And he was naked also. So as he was running, they saw him. But they didn't worry about it at all. They didn't worry to cover themselves or anything like that. Why? Because they noticed he is unaware. There is no need to be worried about, because he is unaware. He now doesn't know what's going around. He's so focused in Krishna consciousness that he is absolutely not interested in anything else. So they didn't worry. But then when Vyasadeva was running after him, to try to catch him. So he was a grihastha. So then as a grihastha, he is aware of things. So as he was running, they saw him, immediately they covered. No, because he is discriminating. He has to see. He is seeing differences. So now we see Shukadev Goswami, then he was free of the anarthas. He was free. He was fully absorbed in Krishna consciousness, and he was, not a threat to anyone. He was just free. When one is not free, like we were saying about the sweet shop, so you go and if there is some desire to eat the sweet, then that starts manifesting as thinking, feeling, and then willing and acting. So when we see when we see something which reminds us of something, we think of something, we may hear some song, we may see some picture, we may see some friend, and immediately the thinking about these things, then it connects to the memories, the mind, and starts making connections. So this thinking, making the connections, then develops feeling. Oh yeah, I remember I saw my friend, and that time, yeah, we were doing some nonsense, and it was so nice. We were having some party, or the picture. Yeah, I remember this is from a movie which was like that. And you start connecting things, and very quickly, if not careful, then you start feeling how it was. So the thinking creates certain level of attachment. The feeling multiplies the attachment. So now when we think of something, then it's not so difficult to deal with. But when we think of something, already feel how it was, our attachments multiplied. Then when we don't care about and then continue further going, then what happens? Then we decide, I want to do it. The attachment again multiplied. So because of that, we are unable to basically handle it. And then what happens is that we will be acting on it. Like we gave the example, not with the sweets. There is we can mention about Yamunacharya. Yamunacharya, great acharya he was a guru of Ramanujacharya. And he used to be a king. So he had everything. But then he gave up and he became a sadhu. So he is giving us a remedy for how to deal with our attachments. So he speaks, whenever there is, he says about himself, when I think of sex, I spit on that idea. So, okay, he has experience and he knows if the idea may come anytime, that the world is full of lust, full of attachments. You can see many things around. That's not a fault. The question is, how do you deal with it? So if you follow the example of, you know, Yamunacharya, then thought comes and immediately not able to discriminate by your intelligence that, okay, this is not good to do. So you reject it. You can spit on the idea. And therefore, you are free of it. You don't have to, you know, get to the trauma of getting, through the attachments and then, you know, going through it and then suffering the consequences. So at the beginning, when the attachment is very minimal, when we think about something, it's easier to get rid of the idea. When we play with the idea and we start getting the feeling of it, then it's more difficult to get rid of the attachment. And when we decide I'm going to do it no matter what, then basically there is no question how we can overcome that. And therefore we get into the fourth stage, which is acting. So now, why do we talk about it? Because these are the anarthas which we have. These are the anarthas which our children will have to also deal with eventually. So now these samskaras help the children to properly deal with the anarthas. And in fact, we follow the advice of, you know, of Chanakya Pandit, who says that the parents, the teacher, the king, no, they have to elevate the child, no, from the material world. So now the question is, how do we do it? So we have to educate the child. Education means not just, no, academics. Education means proper training. How do we then work on the child so then he gets the best benefit from it? So this is the important task we have ahead. And for that, no, the samskaras are the tool which can help. So therefore, then we have to perform the samskaras to help the children. So now, educate the children. What is the purpose of education? So purpose of education is then to give the child, you know, such a benefit. So then when he is adult, he chooses to be Krishna conscious. Ideally, that's what Srila Prabhupada had mentioned. Right? If we work on, we develop the consciousness and the character of the child, that the child, by the time when he's adult, he takes up to Krishna consciousness, he turns it around, he is looking for, you know, worshipping the deities, he is taking part in the festivals. So then we can say, as a parent, then we were successful. As teachers, we were successful. We were able to help the child. But if it happens, then the child, he is uninterested. He doesn't want to participate. He is not he's not chanting his rounds. Then we may be very affected. No? And then the question comes back to us. And the question would be, did I do my best to help the child to be Krishna conscious? Now, if the question is, or the answer to this question is, yes, I did maximum. Like Anga Maharaj. He did maximum, and he was able to walk out. He could not do anything more. So then we can actually say, I did maximum. I did whatever I could. Now I cannot do anything more. I can walk out. But if the answer would be, no, I didn't. I didn't give enough time. I didn't give enough attention. I could have helped the child that time. I could have done this. I could have done that. So actually, because the child is behaving like this, it's my fault. And I feel guilty for that. And the guilt, it's something which will go with us. The guilt is, it's something which will be making difficult for us to get properly focused on Krishna consciousness ourselves, because we know that we had done something not properly. So that's why there is so much stress on the Grihastha ashram. Grihastha ashram then means the husband and the wife both perform their duties and properly while following the four godly principles. It's not easy, but if done properly, then we can answer, yes, I had done everything for my child. And then if he is not doing not so well, I cannot do anything else about it. I had done maximum. And therefore, one can get detached. Okay, now he is adult. He can do whatever he wants to do in his life. And I can go and then take part in Krishna consciousness more seriously, because there is no attachment, nothing, no guilt. So if we perform then our duties properly, that we educate the children, then it will be successful. Either way, we can help our children, we can help ourselves. So if, that's how then we should then approach the education of our children. So one part of the education is, as Srila Prabhupada says, try to develop the divine qualities in the child. The other then is about, you have to figure out how to give the proper association to your children. Because the character of the child is formed by the samskaras and by association. So if we perform all the samskaras properly, develop the great qualities in the child, and then we give him the opportunity for good association, then surely the child will be a great devotee. He will be very Krishna conscious. If, however, we neglect one or the other or both, then it will be not so easy. Not impossible, of course. Anybody can, but the child without the samskaras may have to put more effort into his choosing the right association and wanting to get the proper effect of the association. Then the one who gets the samskaras, he will be looking very naturally for that kind of association. So therefore, then it will be very wise than to give the proper investment, you can say, into the child in the form of the samskaras. The samskaras, then you see Garbhavana samskara. That's the samskara which Srila Prabhupada also he points out as being the most important. Because as we spoke about, that it attracts the jiva according to the consciousness of the parents. So if you start that the jiva attracted to Krishna consciousness is born now in your family, then it's easier to take him from there. So if the focus is there, then the jiva will take birth in the family. Then the other samskaras, when the child is in the womb, so they are done for the protection of the child or protection of the mother, so then the delivery can be safe. Then the jata karma, when the child is being born, so that samskara then is done, so then he gets strength, he is healthy. And there are some other samskaras after that the child goes for the first time for walk, called nishkramanam. Before that, then he is still only with his mother. The child is with the mother and they don't go out. And first time they go out, then it's about properly setting, you can say, resetting the senses of the child. So that it's prescribed the samskara, then it should be done such a way so then the child is exposed to going to the temple, smelling the nice incense, smelling the nice flowers, seeing the deities. Then the hearing should be kirtan. Then the sense should be touching some nice, beautiful like flowers or anything which is very pleasant. That way the child's senses get set to the standard. Now it's described that he should be hearing waterfall, water, running water, seeing the nature, the flowers. So these are important things. They are very subtle, but they are very important. And if they are done, we help the child to develop the finer tissues, finer qualities. Then, it goes on, the samskaras, as the child is growing, then he is taking first grains, which, he is taking grains in the form of Mahaprasad. So that's for, strength, vitality. And in each samskara, then we are asking the Lord to come and to bless him, to protect him. So these samskaras are not like some mundane thing. They are set such a way so they develop the Krishna consciousness in the child and the people around. We can little elaborate on the samskaras were written in the book. The book is called Satkriya Saradipika. Now, the book was written by Gopalbhatta Goswami, one of the six Goswamis in Vrindavan. So if somebody says that following the samskaras is some mundane thing, then the question would be, how can you say that one of the acharyas, one of the Goswamis in Vrindavan, then would focus on writing a mundane book? No, it's not really possible. Another fact about this book is that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Prabhupada, he was very much eager. He was, he sees as a necessary thing that all the grihasthas, all his grihastha disciples must have the book and must follow the book. So it was translated from Sanskrit, into the Bengali and followed. So this book is a way how we can understand how to follow the samskaras and how to properly understand them. The book is also translated into English. So for those then who are interested, then the ability or the possibility is there. So that can be seen. But first, one should understand then the necessity. How do I train my child? Why do I do the samskaras? And then what I need to do to properly give him the best what I can. Then maybe we can mention there are a few more samskaras which are being done. Then there is the samskara upanayanam, which is done for the boys. And upanayanam means coming near. So the boy, then he is basically initiated into studying Vedic scriptures so that he could now study about the Lord, study about how he can transcend this material world. And for us, we see then the samskaras are the pancharatrik samskaras. So when we talk about initiation, that's the same thing. It's also samskara, that's the impression that when we get the initiation, so it's the tilak, it's the kantimala, then it's the name, then we have the mantra. So we are also going through the samskaras while getting initiated, but we may not be aware of it, which is very, very pity, you can say. Because if you are conscious, then you are able to properly absorb. You are able to now be conscious when you are getting the name from the spiritual master and you are then promising, you are giving the four vows, the four regulative principles. If there is a strong impression about what happened, then it will keep reminding you and you will be able to maintain the vows as given to your spiritual master. And in fact, during the initiation, then you are also promising that in front of the fire. So if being aware of, being conscious of it, it will affect the consciousness. But if it's not like that, if it's just something, just go, do some, get some name, I'll do this. But not being able to be conscious of what should be done and what should not be done, then there is a good chance that it will not last very long. So the impression is very important. For the children, we can create the impression. For adults, the adults, they have to desire that impression. That's the fact. So if we then are aware of how to work with the samskaras, then we can very much perform then our duties as the parents, teachers, gurus, or kings properly, and we can give the proper education, we can give the proper association, and therefore give the best possible things what we can give not to our children. So maybe, are there any questions? Do we want to ask something? Now, what specific areas? I don't know, if there are some.
Yeah, I think, did Mangalavati Machi have something, or Tatu Vada Prabhu?
She has one question, but she got the phone call and she will come back a little later. So,
okay. Anyway. We'll take Krishnakirti Prabhu then first. Are you? Yeah.
Yes. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna Maharaj.
Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna.
As I understood, the samskaras, the fire ceremony, are meant for the boys, especially. Yeah? But can we do it also for the girls, or it's some?
Yeah, of course. Between? No. See, no. Most of the samskaras are done for both boys and girls. Now, Upanayanam Samskara is done only for the boys. Yeah, but the samskaras, when the child is in the womb, is done, you don't know what child is. Jada Karma, done for all. Nishkramanam, for all. It is Paushtika Karma, done for all. So, it's just some specific one. So, for the boy, the Upanayanam, this is his day. That's his most important samskara. For the girl, the most important samskara is the vivaha. When they get married, she's getting married, it's her day. So everything is according to what she likes, how it should be done, and everything is so all the samskaras, everything which was given for the boy during Upanayanam, basically she gets at that time. All the attention. So yes, everybody gets a samskara. It's just the impression. So then the Upanayanam is about now renunciation. You are brahmachari. So you have to follow austerity. You have to service attitude. You have to do everything that. The girls are not necessarily led that way. There is no austerity really for the girls. It's a different kind of austerity. The boy, then he may live in the forest with his guru. And now it just serves the guru. And then just does only worship. He only eats whatever his guru let him take. So it's austere. So it's not for the girls. But the boy, he gets the strength from it. He gets the tejas. And that, with that proper attitude, that he has a service attitude, he can be austere. So then from that, being a good brahmachari, he can become a good grihastha. But if he does not have these qualities, and he is like a woman, he is not a good brahmachari, and then he gets married, the woman, she is expecting a man. She is expecting, okay, now you have to do this, right? You do that. I can rely on you. The girl, she wants to respect the husband. She must respect the husband. She will respect the husband because he is a man. And he can do things which she cannot. The austerity is for the man. So she will respect it. But if he is unable to, you know, be austere when needed, then what's the difference? So she must respect him. And for that, then he should develop the qualities of a brahmachari. That will give him the ability to become a good grihastha. So some of the brahmacharis, then they naturally, they will become upakurvana brahmacharis. Means upakurvana brahmachari means that he will then get married eventually. He follows the vow of his brahmacharya, which can be, you know, 5 years, 10 years, 12 years. It depends on his vow. But once then he has fulfilled the vow, then the guru will give him blessings. Okay, now you can get married if you want to. And at that time, then he goes through another samskara, samavartana, which is graduation. So, and the boy, he becomes snataka. And then when he's a snataka, then he is able then to go and get married. Another kind of brahmachari is, he's a nashtika brahmachari. So then he doesn't need to get married. He has realized what it means, you know, to actually go through the marriage. He is not in need of that facility for sense gratification. So then he can live with the guru, throughout his life. Or he can just go and do some services as a brahmachari, not looking for facility, unnecessary facility. So he has realized. The other type of brahmachari, he is taking up grihastha ashram to become realized. He is very much strictly as a brahmachari. He enters grihastha ashram, he remains brahmachari. Srila Prabhupada calls him actually grihastha brahmachari. Because he follows the four egotic principles, he follows everything as a brahmachari, but he has some concessions. He may have some place called his place. This is my house. This is my wife. These are my children. This is my car. And now there is some way of that he can call it his own. Brahmachari does not have these facilities, really. But the grihastha, now, for being able to do that, then he has to pay a lot. That's the way of the austerity. Because he has to do a lot of duties, a lot of service. He has to work hard to bring money. But to bring money home, it's not enough. He cannot just bring money and give, okay, my dear wife, here are money, don't bother me. No. He comes home and she wants to talk. The children wants to play. So he cannot say, I just worked for 12 hours. I'm tired. Leave me alone. No. He has to come and he has to be very jolly. Oh, yeah, okay. What should we do today? No. So he has to be able to satisfy, the whole family. If he doesn't do that, then what's going to happen? The wife is going to be not happy. When she is not happy, he will not take rest. He will not be able to. So he knows he should rather do that. No, satisfy the wife, satisfy the children. And then, okay, then you go and take rest and then you are peaceful. But it may not be much. It's austerity. But if he does this austerity, so what is going to be his realization? His realization is going to be, I have put so much time and effort in the grihastha ashram. And what did I get back? So he will see, there are some, the children, they grow up, but they have their own lives. The wife is there. She's being taken care of by the children. So he sees that, okay, now I had done my duties. Now I've realized that nothing really holds me here, and he can renounce his duties as a grihastha. We see the example, Kardama Muni. He was excellent brahmachari, but he had the thoughts, maybe he should get married. Now, the Lord himself, he arranged a marriage. Now, at the time, the best girl available for him. Now, that was, Devahuti, right? The daughter of Manu. And so they got married. And then first he was like little, confused, may say. So he was brahmachari. He was still in the mood. So he was performing austerities. But now his wife, she was serving him very diligently. Then when he realized that, she's also suffering, she's performing austerity, which is not meant for that. Then he, being a powerful yogi, then he created a flying city with all the opulence you can have. And he was now there, not just giving, okay, you go and fly around, do whatever you want. Now let me here take care of my thing. No, his duty was being a husband. So he enjoyed with her. They were flying on different planets, on different locals, everywhere, and having fun. It was sanctioned by the Lord. And when time was over, for his playing around, then as he gave a promise that he will give her children. So then he gave her 9 daughters. And then, so now my duty as a husband, it's fulfilled. She said, well, yeah, my dear husband, it's fulfilled, yeah, but please, would it be possible? Could you give me a son? Okay. So he gave a son. And because we are talking about special personalities, so when the child is not there, basically very quickly he is born and immediately he grows up to adult. So as Kapila Dev is born, he grows up into adult, being adult. And now, so Kapila Dev is here. Now he is able to take care of Devahuti. And she was very happy. And the husband, he feeling now no attachment because he had done his duty. So he went to Ksanyas and left the house. And Kapila Dev, then he instructed his mother properly into Krishna conscious philosophy. And then she now being self-realized, then Kapila Dev left, and then she was able to complete her lifetime then in full Krishna consciousness. So that's the ideal way how it can be done. So that's why Srila Prabhupada, he speaks so much about that the grihastha should take, he says sannyas, vanaprastha, at the age of 50. At least the vanaprastha. The vanaprastha also has few stages. The first stages of vanaprastha is that the husband and wife still live together, but they are not part of the social scene. That they are living more separately, and they are focusing. They can be focusing on preaching. They can be focusing on studying. They can be focusing on Krishna consciousness. So they are living together, but they are focused more on the devotional activities. So at least that should be done. One should not try to, you know, be part of the grihastha activities, the social scene, till the end of his life, because that takes him the energy at the time also for performing the devotional activities in, you know, full scope. Of course, grihastha can also perform devotional activities. There is no limitation for that. But because he has to perform, you know, the activities of to satisfying the wife, satisfying the children, making the money, so it takes time from that. So when he is realized and he can renounce that, then he can fully focus then on being then absorbed in Krishna consciousness. Yeah?
Thank you very much for explanation. Yes, great answer. Hare Krishna. Can I ask one more?
Yes.
Yes. As we understand, we need to perform samskaras, but also we need the brahmana who also learn it to how to do it, and in which in this Kali Yuga period we don't have any quote, as it in Srimad Bhagavatam said, we don't have qualified brahmana in Kali Yuga. What we can do? And for sometimes the devotee ask me also to perform some samskaras for them, and I feel I don't have any quality to do it. But what's the main maybe quality or the principles of this brahminical principles to perform samskaras?
Okay, so the main principle is that the person performing the samskara, now ideally he's Krishna conscious, because you are trying to develop the consciousness of the child and also the people present then into Krishna consciousness. If you would read through the samskaras in the Satya Sardipika book, then you would see the Gopalabhata Goswami, he's putting into each samskara the mantras such a way, so which are all connected either with Krishna or Vishnu. So if the person then who is doing the samskaras, he is focused on the meaning of the mantras, meaning of what it is that please Lord come and bless the child, protect the child, give the child health, give the child ability for prosperity. And so you are on the behalf of the child requesting the Lord. If you understand this, then there is no doubt that the samskara is all Krishna conscious. So if we can do that, then we are qualified then to do the samskaras. Now, the ritual of the samskara is helping to carry on the Krishna conscious effect. So therefore, the most important would be that the right consciousness at the time of the ceremony is performed. And the other aspect is that for the ceremony, generally, you invite, many, people, because it's a festivity. So like if it's in the village, so then there is samskara, being done for a child, so that, the whole village comes and it's part of it. And there is a distribution of prasad and then so many things. So everybody has like a great remembrance. And as it's going on, then bhajans are there. There are some plays. and the children have nice time, but they are all exposed to the proper consciousness. It has effect on them too. So that's the proper way of how to do the samskara. Being conscious. Now, nowadays, these samskaras are, you know, a little bit more like a socializing. If it's not done properly, like a vivaha, now you go for the marriage and it's just kind of like everybody has a nice time. They don't really even care about, what's happening. What is the girl promising? What is the husband promising? How is he going to take care? What is he going to do? No, these are all secondary for them. For them, okay, what's there to eat? No. Oh, now can you post so I can make some nice picture? No. Oh, what is she wearing? Oh, this is not good. And all that kind of like just mentalities is about just sense gratification. Though, if done properly, there is also the time, okay, let's go to enjoy. We can just get together, but in the proper mood. So if that can be done properly, then the samskara will be successful. So the samskara focuses on developing or elevating the consciousness of the child and of the people around, but at the same time, then it's a nice ceremony which is seen as a nice, very Krishna conscious festival. So that should be done that way. If done, then no problem. These samskaras can be performed. And I would recommend, just read through the book. No, do it through the book. And try to understand the meaning of what actually everything is for. There are many cultural points which may not be very well known. So then you should ask somebody then who is aware of. We are working on another edition of the Satkriya Saradipika, more explaining all these cultural points, so it's more clear. But that's basically what the book is about. How to perform the samskara such a way, so then there is a change of consciousness.
So
if you can do, no problem.
I will try my best. Thank you.
Okay. Hare Krishna.
Mangalavati Machi, would you like to ask?
Hare Krishna Maharaj, please accept my
Hare Krishna.
Hare Bol. I had a question about what you said about Yamuna Acharya, because I remember there is one verse in the Bhagavad Gita, I can't remember exactly word by word, but it says something like when illusion is there, you remain neutral. And when illusion is not there, you also remain neutral. So I just became a little bit like perplexed here that, Yamuna Acharya is spitting at the thought of, one could say in one sense, Maya. So if you please could maybe broaden my understanding on this point.
Okay. So, you see, there is no doubt that Yamuna Acharya was a pure soul, right? So, he didn't have to, spit on thought, because to him, he is completely dhira. He is equipoised. But he is asking for our behalf. Arjuna asking Krishna in Bhagavad Gita all these questions. Is because Arjuna was actually bewildered? Arjuna, being a pure devotee, he was not bewildered. But he acted as he is for what? For benefit of the whole humanity. So Yamuna Acharya, he is giving an example. If you want to know how to deal with your desires, with your anarthas, so this is how you do. When a thought comes, don't pay attention to it. See, if the anartha is not present in the heart, you won't notice. There is no need to feel bad about, because he won't notice. But if the anartha is present in even some like a slight form, then you will notice. And when you notice, then if your intelligence is able, it's capable of controlling your mind, then the intelligence will give you a signal. That's not for you. Don't go that way. And you realize, wow, what happened to me? Oh, I spit on that idea. Why did I even get distracted? And then you are free of it. And if you do it with the proper consciousness, you may be completely free of the anartha, no, at all. Or it may take a few more, spittings like that before you get completely free of the anartha. But you will be. But then what will you tell those who are not free of the anartha? You can say, oh, I don't feel anything. No, I don't have any, feelings. So you cannot preach. Right? Because as the Uttamadhikari, you are completely equipoised, dhira, and you don't have to worry about anything. But others have to. But what will you tell them? Oh, don't worry, it will go away. It will not. We know that. So talk about your experiences, what you had previously, even you don't have them now. You are free of that. But you can still speak to those who have them. Yeah, I have experienced that. Yes, the best thing is when the thought comes, spit on it. You understand? That's what you preach. But you don't have to worry about yourself because now you are beyond that. Like Yamunacharya is beyond that. But he is giving example. He is giving us nice way how we can deal with our own anarthas. Our own desires.
So it means we should, with the help of intelligence, we should reject it as a bad option. I mean, like, could you hear me, Maharaj?
With the intelligence, See, it's like this. And we have constantly intelligence and the mind talking and fighting. What's going to happen? What activity are we going to do? The intelligence can discriminate. The intelligence deals with, okay, I know this is right and I know this is wrong. How I know that? I was trained like that. So the training can be, Guru Sadhu Shastra. The training can be, what I was trained in, then it's going to be according to the guru, according to the training, right? Then, if the intelligence has the power, has the influence over the mind, so then the intelligence can say, we are going to do this because this is the right thing, and we are not going to do this because this is the wrong thing.
But if we are not able to use our intelligence to overpower our mind, the mind deals with, I like and I don't like. So if there are some nice like sense gratification, I like it, then I want to go for it. But if it's not nice, nice feeling, then I don't want it. So if the intelligence then the anarthas with the desire, they are directly connected to the mind. So we go and we see some activity, or like you were saying about the speed, so you see the speed and it's in the mind, all these memories. That was tasting so nice and I just got the taste for it. I'm actually hungry and I didn't eat the whole day. And we can start giving so many excuses why I need to take it. and we will justify it for ourselves. But we know it's not right. Because it's not good by the devotee. No. So, if you want, do it yourself and not offer it to Krishna. Then, no, but no, it will take time. I don't know how to make it. And nobody sees anyway. So, we get overpowered by the mind. And the mind enslaves the intelligence. The mind will make it, okay, now you work it out, how to make sure that nobody will see me, that I cannot do it such a way, so that, no, just how to make it happen. So in that scenario, then when the mind is in control of the intelligence, then what are our chances? The chances are only if there is something nice for the senses, I'm going to do it. And something not nice, I'm not going to. But it's not controlled by the intelligence. If it's nice to get up in the morning, early in the morning, I will get up. But if I don't want to, I will not get up. So what that I miss Mangalarati? So what that I will not chant? I just want to watch movies. The whole day. I just want to lie down and just watch movies. That's it. The intelligence will say, come on, get up. No, go for Mangalarati, change around. No, read Bhagavatam. You are supposed to go to war. You are supposed to do this. No. Today I'm sick. No. And what can we do? The intelligence can say, no, don't do it. This is not right. No, maybe you will lose your job. No. I can find excuses. I just don't want to go today. But if the intelligence has the, upper hand, then time to get up. Oh yeah, but it's so cold. Oh, no, get out of the bed. And then you are able to. Yeah, that's the right thing to do. So you follow the intelligence. And the mind being under the control of the intelligence, it will make things happen. No, you focus the mind on the, go to the shower, take cold shower. Okay, so let's do it quickly. No. And then, no, it's done. Today, no, okay, now I have to focus on my job. I have to be awake. Oh, I'm falling asleep. So let's start walking. Or not do something kind of like a certain day awake. Because it's the right thing to do. But if the mind has the upper hand, then, oh, you are so tired. No, let me just take a little rest. No, you can chant later on. No, maybe you can take shower a little bit later on. No, don't worry about it. You understand? So, and we decide which one we want to have in control, the other. And it's decided by the anarthas. Because as long as the anarthas are present in the heart to the extent that we cannot control them, then that's the time when we say that we cannot control our mind. Because anything we look for around, there is some anartha for, oh yeah, I want to enjoy this flower. Oh, I want to enjoy, there is so much snow. I want to enjoy some skiing. I want to enjoy swimming in the water. No, I want to, enjoy this. I want to enjoy that. There's unlimited desires which are being created by the mind. And you start thinking, feeling, and then you will do it. But if following the intelligence, so it's, forget all that. Now it's time for study. You have to study. And then you have to study 2 hours, 3 hours, 4 hours study. And then you focus on the study and then there's no time for anything. Intelligent. This is the right thing to do. So if we take care of the anarthas, then we will be able to control the mind. And like Arjuna said in Bhagavad Gita, control the mind. Now it's easier to control the wind than to control the mind. Critical. So, but removing the anarthas, the mind naturally will be controlled. So we have to focus on to remove the anarthas. And the anarthas are removed by devotional activity. So performing devotional service, then one gets purified, cheto dharpana marjana. The heart gets purified and the devotee starts more and more appreciating the devotional activity. And with the focus on okay, I want to serve Krishna, his anarthas are being taken away. So his attachment to the material world is being diminished. And he is getting attached to the spiritual activity. So at certain point, when there is a point of anartha nivritti, then the most of the anarthas are removed. Not all, most. But it's enough to the point that the intelligence can control the mind. So for example, the devotee still in the morning may not want to get up. He may say, maybe 5 more minutes or 10 more minutes. But the intelligence still will find, 10 minutes gone, now get out. And he will understand. So the small little desires still may be there. The anarthas are there in the weak form. But the intelligence can take care of it. So he will not suffer not that much. And then he becomes on the platform nishtha. Before that, then it's anishta. It's actually anishtita bhakti. It's unsteady. Sometimes he chants his rounds, sometimes he doesn't chant it down, sometimes he focuses on devotional activity, sometimes not, sometimes he gets up, sometimes not. He does things because he likes, sometimes he doesn't like, so he doesn't do. So it's unsteady. But from the point when the intelligence is able to control the mind because of the lack of the anarthas, then it's nishtha. It's called nishtita bhakti. Then he knows, today I'm supposed to get up this time, I'm supposed to do this, I'm supposed to do that, I'm supposed to do that, and he does it. Like you see in the life of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, then his life, that day in his life, was divided into minutes. He would get up, read, chant, then he would go and take bath, and then he continues reading. He would sleep only for a few hours. And in between, during the day, sometimes he would take a nap. But everything is in timing. He knows exactly, 3 o'clock get up, 4 o'clock, japa, 5 o'clock worshipping deities, 6 o'clock this. And it was exactly, and he knew. And then he puts the mind into it because the intelligence controls the mind. So there is no need for being distracted. But if we don't do that, then we are distracted by the mind and the senses. Think, I want to go there. Study after. First I go and play. We are unable to do that. So that's anishtita. But the devotee then becomes nishtha, performs the nishtha bhakti, then he is able to control, like we see the example of the Yamuna Acharya. The thought comes, and you may for a moment contemplate about it, but with your intelligence you reject spit on it. It's a nonsense. And you go on with your activities. You don't have to be absorbed in thinking that maybe should I do it or should I? You reject it. And the ability to reject is because the person is capable, he's steady. Yes?
Yes, Maharaj. Very clear. Thank you.
Naris Prabhu?
Hare Krishna, Maharaj and the devotees. I wanted to say it's amazing how sometimes before asking the question, it's already actually answered. And I had the two questions, and one was about this mind and intelligence, and you answered it perfectly. Then I had another question from that one, and that was answered as well. So maybe I still have one question, and from that first one I had kind of a small one. If we take an example for waking up at the morning and the battle between the mind and the intelligence, why it's so difficult exactly at the morning hours, for example, to wake up, not later in the day.
Well, it has to do with the modes of nature. So when the body is asleep, so it's a tamaguna. So the tamaguna covers things like, Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita, like mode of goodness means a person knows what should be done and what should not be done. Then, he does the right thing. Passion, then he is unsure. And that ignorance is the opposite. So, the body is covered by the ignorance, if there is no desire or there is no way how to get rid of the ignorance, so that will affect the activities, and it means one will not be really able to get up, because the mind wants something which is pleasing to the senses. So now, when you are in the bed and maybe it's cold, so getting from the warm bed into the cold place, then it's unpleasant situation. It's some austerity. And why would you do it if you don't have to? Right? So if there is nobody to wake you up, it's just you, and if you don't get up, nothing happens, then there is a good chance you will not get up. Right? So that's the ignorance. So first, then we will need to then kick the mind into the, at least passion. Do it quickly. Now get it done. Now maybe not even properly, just do it quickly, get over with it. Go to the shower and then just quickly take bath, or maybe just hot water or whatever it is. And then immediately, then now once you get out of the ignorance, then the passion can help. But then the passion, it's going many times the wrong direction. So we have to bring the mind again back to goodness. So for you to be able to actually sit down and to properly know then what needs to be done. So you want to not chant japa, you want to not study. So one thing which can be done in the morning, that you want to cut the ignorance. So at the time, you can maybe play some bhajans, Srila Prabhupada's bhajans. That helps to cut the ignorance. So it can help the mind to wake up, or more like the intelligence to, that's the right time now to get up and then to go. So it can help to not argue with the mind not to do the wrong thing. Now, specifically for waking up, what helps is that you make a sankalpa. Sankalpa means basically like you make a decision, you can say. It's not a vow as such, but it's like a decision. So before going to sleep, so in the evening, then you may make a sankalpa. And it will be that, so tomorrow I'm going to get up at this time and take bath, and I want to chant not that many rounds before Mangalarati, for example. So that's the reason you give yourself a reason and you give yourself a schedule. So the intelligence instructs the mind, and the mind, when it accepts it, then it will make it happen. But if you don't make it, and if you say it like, okay, tomorrow I'll get up whenever. So you are giving the time or the option to the mind to go according to what's pleasing. What's the best, what's the most pleasing at that moment. So like an example. We had the boys, okay. They were sleeping outside, sleeping back, right? So they were sleeping and yeah, they're very sound now that they're very fast sleepers. Storm comes and they are sleeping outside. So then the rain immediately just wakes them up. So you are enjoying the nice sleep in the sleeping bag. But because something comes and disturbs that, so you immediately... And he wakes up in the morning and his sleeping bag was completely soaking wet and he didn't know what happened. So his sleep was so strong that he was even unable to know the mind kind of like to tell him that there is something not less pleasant because you are getting wet. So, but if we decide, okay, I want to get up.
Thank you very much for such a practical advice, because actually I'm struggling with it for some time. For some time it was okay, now I'm struggling and I basically run out of ideas, so I will definitely try this. Hopefully it helps. And then the second question was about the attachments, for example, for the parents, which are maybe not so visible to others but known by ourselves. How does they affect the child? Young child, for example.
Well, see, the parents, they have to be able to address their desires. No. The child also, no, he discovers, he knows the parents. So it's like you have some specific attachments or like it in mind. For example, like watching movies, right? Maybe the parents are attached to watch some movies. Now they should know that this is not the best thing. And there is no need to really expose the child to it. So then, but they, they cannot maybe control the desire and they have to watch movies sometimes. So it will be better to do it without the child. Do it such a time when the child is not at home or something, and then it's done. It's not need to be hypocritic about it. That telling the child you cannot do anything, you cannot do it secretly watching. But rather don't create the opportunity. Don't necessarily pollute the mind of the child. You should know it's not the best. So try to work on that, try to minimize that or eliminate it as possible, if it's possible. But don't expose the children to something which it's wrong unnecessarily. So deal with your attachments, you know, as you need to. And now try not to expose the child. But at the same time, just don't become like a hypocritical that you are prohibiting something to the child and not yourself are doing it. So at some point, you have to be open with your child also. Yeah, I have these attachments. So sometimes, no, I do it, but it's not the best. It's not the best. Ideally, if you don't even get into it. No, but if you are into it, there is a good chance that the child also will get into it. No, you cannot avoid that. There is one story. There was a child, and he was very much attached, not eating sweets. And he was eating sweets now a lot. And now he was eating sweets to the extent that he was getting sick from it. He was getting a lot of boils, you know, infections. And it was, he was not in good condition. His mother, she started to be really worried about him. Because he would always get some sweet somewhere. So, and then she went to see some doctors. She went to see some people to help him. Everybody tried, but they could not get rid of the child's attachment for eating sweets. So, as she was desperate, then she came to know that in the neighborhood village, then some sadhu is there, and he can do many things. So she did not have any other options. So she decided, okay, let's go to see the sadhu. Maybe he can help. So she went to the sadhu with the child, was a boy, and she requested the sadhu, look, my dear sir, that child of mine, this boy, he is so much addicted to eating sweets. And he is getting sick from it. Could you please help him to get rid of the attachment? And the sadhu said, yes, okay, I will do that. Come after 1 week. So she was very happy, naturally. Said, okay. So 1 week later, she eagerly goes again to the sadhu and asking, okay, so my dear sir, now we are here. Please, then you said come here after 1 week. We came. Can you help the child? And he said, yes, I will help him. But come after 1 week. He said, okay, no problem. As long as you are comfortable that you can help him. Yeah, I'll be able to come after 1 week. So they come after 1 week, and the mother being a little like more worried, and please, now the situation is getting worse. Could you help him now? I will definitely help him. It will be easily possible. But please come after 1 week. The mother was starting to doubt. Is he able to help them? Why is he saying that come after 1 week, after 1 week? Well, but I don't have anybody else who can help. So, okay, I have no other option. So they go back home, come back after 1 week. And then after 1 week, the mother really in anxiety. And it's really bad. Please help him. And the sadhu said to the boy, please come here. Then he asked the boy to come. And now he speaks to him a little bit. And he just says, my dear boy, you see, you eating your sweets like that, your health is not good. It's putting your mother in anxiety. So you stop eating the sweets. Will you? Yes, I will. Okay. And the mother, like, so that's it? Yes, that's it. Okay. All right. No, so she didn't know what to do. Okay. Yeah, thank you very much. And they left. So, and then, it was after some months later that, the mother, she was, going again through the village, and the sadhu was there, so she just dropped by. And she came to the sadhu and she said, thank you very much. Since you told the boy not to eat the sweets, he didn't touch anything. He was fully free of the attachment. So thank you so much for it. But can I ask you a question? Yes, please. Why did you ask us to come here every week for 1 month like this? You just told them don't eat the sweets. So why didn't you tell him that in the first time when we saw you? And he said, my dear lady, it's very simple. When you came the first time that your son is addicted to eating sweets, I myself was addicted to eating sweets. So if I would tell him, no, give the instruction, don't eat sweets, but I'm attached to eating sweets, it will not work. So the time when I asked you to come again and again, I was getting rid of the attachment myself. When you came the last time, I was free of the attachment. Therefore, I gave the instruction to your son, don't eat sweets, and it had the power. He was able to take it because I was free of the desire myself. So that's how it is. That if you are capable, if you are free of the desire to instruct somebody, then you can help him much better way than if you are not free of the desire yourself and you are trying to help somebody not to get free of the desire. Like a doctor. If a doctor, he is going to be smoking and telling somebody don't smoke, what will you take from it? What effect will it have? What does he know? But if you don't smoke and you instruct somebody not to smoke, they will take you more seriously. Because you are not doing it, so it's possible. So they will at least think about it. You understand?
Yes, thank you very much. But about the smoking, I remembered one example. So I was wondering more about that. For example, there was one non-devotional family, like my relatives, the husband was smoking, and like the wife and the children for about 10 years didn't know that he's smoking actually. So apparently he was hiding that so well that nobody knew. How that could affect the children, maybe if nobody even knows, but he's still doing something which is not good attachment.
There may be some subtle effect, but no, he is not definitely hiding it because it has not to influence the child. So no, it's better than just coming and say, anyway, no, I'm smoking, so I'll just smoke anywhere I want. You understand? So, no, he's hiding it because he understands it's not right. And it's not right, especially not in front of the children and the wife. So then, no, he's just doing everything for at least to, no, conceal it. So it's better than just coming out and anyway, that's me. I just smoke and no, I don't care what you say. It's the same thing like parents. sometimes the husband and wife may argue, sometimes even scream at each other. Now, if they have to argue, don't do it in front of the children. The children has a, they have a high, you know, understanding, high opinion of God. They love both parents. But if they see parents fighting, then there is a good chance they will start taking sides. And it will affect, you know, their consciousness. So, if they have to argue, they don't do it in front of the children. No, it's not, oh, anyway, we argue, so what does it matter? So let's do it in front of anyone, anytime, as we want. No, they should have some consideration for the children. This is not good to expose children to see how the mother and father are fighting.
Marius's internet connection seems to be quite low, so I think he's frozen from us. Let's just give it a minute, see if it comes.
It's my one or?
Yes, Marius, it was yours.
Okay.
But we can hear you now.
Oh, I see. Okay.
It's still a little weak, but now we can hear at least.
Okay. Sorry for that.
That's okay. India, what do we do?
Thank you very much for the answers. It's really useful. Thank you.
Hare Krishna.
Does anyone else have anything? Okay, so Maharaj, I was thinking, could you also help us to recognize, you said it's very important that we perform the samskaras properly. Can you help us to recognize what are the common mistakes that devotees make sometimes in performing samskaras?
Okay. So, one of the common mistakes now is just thinking about that it's just a ritual. So you just do some yagya, kind of like it, do some mantras, no, and I have done the samskara. Or, like I had seen, one samskara, Upanam samskara, being given in South India. It's similar like the marriage, because that's for the boy, the marriage more for the girl. So it's the same. About what's going on between the book. That's like the easy. Even like on the marriages, you can see, who pays attention to the yagya.
Mm.
It's about kind of just all the externals. It's actually the center. So, in front of the yagya, the boy, he's supposed to then give the vow. I'm going to perform austerity. I'm going to sip water for purification. Now I'm going to have a proper service attitude. Now and I'm going to avoid sleeping during the day. So these vows, these are one of the center of the Upanayanam ceremony. But in South India, when they were doing it, they didn't even ask the boy to do this vow.
Again, you've frozen, Marj. Hare Krishna, Marj, can you hear us now?
Yeah, I can hear.
We just got 7 minutes left. So.
Yes, so, then that's one common mistake, just to see it as like a ritual. But, not considering the consciousness. Like, for example, when Srila Prabhupada, he talks about Garbharana Samskaram. So that the main focus is at the time that, the couple should, hear bhajans, chant japa, and read Bhagavatam throughout the day. For what? To affect the consciousness. So if that's done, for the purpose, because I want not to be fully conscious when they unite together, then there is a much greater chance that their consciousness will be on a proper level, because Krishna will help if there is a desire, and then the samskara will be successful. But if it's just kind of like it just mechanically chant and just read for the sake of, I have read, there is no change of consciousness, then it will not have the effect. It will not be, properly done. And then we blame, the samskara doesn't work. Look, I had done all the samskaras and look at my kids. They are so naughty. So bad, they are not Krishna conscious, So samskaras don't work. But did we, do it such a way so it has effect on the consciousness? Mm-hmm. It's about the consciousness level. The ritual part is a secondary part. So focus on how to perform the samskara, so that we can change the consciousness. So if that's done, so it's between the Lord and the Jiva. We are just on the behalf of the Jiva asking the Lord, for the protection or for the qualities or for, whatever it may be. Giving health, long life. So that we should do. And the second, if we take it properly in the sense of that it's a it's a social activity. So if we involve more people invite friends, invite brahmanas and devotees, and then have a festival. Have those people, make them happy. Give nice prasad, give them nice attention. Darati pratigrihnati, guhanakati prishati, bhungte bojayate. You can do all that, make them happy, and they will be able to give also blessings, because they are very happy. It's like Nanda Maharaj, when there is Janmashtami, so Krishna is born, so then he invites many brahmanas, gives a lot of gifts for that very reason. And that's the culture. That's the Vaishnava culture, just invite. But many times we see devotees kind of like try to make it as like private as possible, and then that's not the culture. The culture should be that it's a festival for, if it's in the village, it's in the village, or for the temple, or whoever, it's connected, they should be invited, and it should be make it into a celebration, into a festival. That helps to achieve the purpose of the samskara. But it should be in the proper mood. No, it should not slip into that it's just the celebration and there is no Krishna consciousness in it. So I would say these are the main two common mistakes. Mm-hmm. And one more thing also, sometimes I do hear arguments. Why do we do samskaras at all? We just chant Hare Krishna. Right? So we are sadhus, we chant Hare Krishna, and there is no need for samskaras. Now, why did you get married? If you just chant Hare Krishna, then just go sit under the tree, chant Hare Krishna. Why do you get married? Mm-hmm. The marriage itself, it's not Krishna conscious act. It can be that both are Krishna conscious, but you can be Krishna conscious on your own. If you want to get married, there are some desires. The desires are not necessarily Krishna conscious. They are not Krishna conscious. Mm-hmm. So now, because of that, then We cannot speak like this. Grihastha cannot say, oh, just chant Hare Krishna and everything is fine. The Grihastha ashram is about, you know, duties, doing things properly. And for them, Gopalata Goswami wrote the samskaras so that they can perform them. So they should be doing it. Not just, okay, we just chant Hare Krishna. You are giving the best to your child. You are trying for that. So doing that, that will help. Now, like we said, you are investing something for the child. What do you know what the desires of the child are? Why you don't want to develop best qualities for the child? Why you don't want to give him, you know, the best protection? Why do you don't want him to be the most healthy? Why not? Why you don't want the Lord to protect him? Why not? Just because you chant Hare Krishna? And everything has to be there. So, no, the Lord automatically must know that, no, because your child, he has to, no, take care, he don't have to do anything. The samskara is also part of devotional activities. You are asking on behalf of the jiva, the Lord, please help the jiva. What's wrong with that? So, thinking otherwise, thinking, oh, we don't have to do it because we are just above all that. That's another common mistake.
Thank you, Maharaj. We're just at the time now, but there is one more question. Do you mind?
No problem.
Okay. Mangalavati Machi, would you like to put your camera on and ask?
So, Hare Krishna Maharaj.
One Hare Krishna.
Question about samskaras. What if the father, for some reason, is unable to be there?
Sorry?
What if the father of the child is unable to attend samskara, or maybe not willing, or legally not possible for him to attend, or something? So
again, at least, no, if it's done, then no, the priest is there, the mother is there. So they try to create the situation in such a way. Still, the principles apply. Develop, no, such a, no, atmosphere. So then there is the Krishna consciousness. That's the predominance. So that's, if the father, no, is there, naturally it will be, no, more powerful. If he cannot be there, so somebody on his behalf, it will be the priest. No, who can perform? It depends on the samskara. No, there are ways. No, what can be done? But that's more like into details, some specific cases. But the samskara should be done.
And then just, I know I asked you before, but I have kind of unfortunately forgotten this, your answer, and it's difficult to find it in the recordings, but it was one child who has not gone through any samskaras, who is 5 years old, a girl, and is that possible now to perform some of those samskaras now?
Yes. Is she already going to the school?
No.
So, no, the next samskara probably would be like a Vidyarambha.
Mm.
That's a samskara like, no, entering into the school, like, no, just a samskara to start studying formally.
Yeah.
So with that samskara, all the previous samskaras can be also done.
Okay. Now I'm writing it down this time because.
Okay.
So all of, I mean, of course, not the Garbhodana, but all others one can do.
Yeah, then they can be done. One after another, no, just can be performed.
Mm-hmm.
And it will have maybe not the full effect, but it will have effect on the child, nonetheless.
Yeah. And if the if the mother is not so willing to pay, so does that matter? I mean, let's say the aunts are paying because the mother doesn't have maybe so much understanding of the value of samskaras. So does, who is doing that moneyly sacrifice, you could say, economical sacrifice?
See, well, if she is unable to, then it's also better if somebody can give something to her to give the dakshina. It should come from her. If it's just the mother or the father, should come from him.
Mm.
So even if it's like a small, it can be just, you know, 1 rupee, also anything.
Mm.
But there should be dakshina.
Yeah.
The dakshina makes actually all the activities of the priest performed, then makes it happen as it's supposed to be. So they are all aimed for the child. The dakshina now seals it, and these activities then will have full effect. If they don't give anything, then it will not have necessarily full effect. He may not do the best for the child, but the parents will not probably see the full effect of it. And if they don't want to give anything, why do they even ask for it?
Yeah, exactly. No. It's just the problem today. People put money on the wrong things. And then when it comes to religion, then they don't want to put money there. Although they have a lot.
So yeah.
Problem.
Everybody should give according to their capacity. If somebody is poor, then it just give 1 or 10 euros, something minimum. But and he gives 1 euro, then it's just he's laughing. That's insulting, in a way. So that also will not have full effect.
Yeah.
And there are two things. You see, there is a dana, which is like a gift, and there's also the dakshina.
Mm-hmm.
So the dana is about that he gets prasad, he serves the other priests, he gives like a attention that way, and there is a dakshina which he gives then to the priest for the appreciation. That's his donation.
Mm.
But many times when we talk about doing some yagya in Western countries, then there is also like you have to pay for the transportation, you have to pay for the car, or you have to pay for the ingredients, because the yajaman or the parents don't know what to buy. So he has to buy. So many times, all this comes to a lot of money, and they are not even willing to give for that.
Yeah.
But that's not even a dakshina. That's part of the dana. That's not there. So if the transportation and all the ingredients, everything costs 100 euros, so they should give him that without any question. That's to cover your expenses. And then on top of that, they should give a dakshina. The dakshina has the effect, it seals the activity beneficial then not to the yajaman or to the child.
Mm.
So both things should be present. Of course, the culture in the West is different. That's not there. Even though it used to be there before, long time ago, but nowadays, it's a lot of among devotees. Oh, we're all devotees. So, don't worry about it. Just do this, and then don't expect anything from me.
Mm.
But many of the priests, they are doing that, dominical activity. and they also like depend on a Dakshina. In India, it's maybe not that crucial because they can live very, very minimum. But in the West, if somebody is not living, putting full effort and focus on and performing the activities, and he's not asking for payment, then the contribution, the dakshina, the appreciation of the person actually is doing that, and he did it well, should be there. So according to one's capacity, one should give that much of the contribution.
Mm. Thank you. Yes, very clear. Now I wrote it down. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, so I think it's time to end now. Marge, did you have any concluding words you'd like to say?
Well, okay. I would like that devotees contemplate on what we spoke about. You read Srila Prabhupada's books, and you will read a lot about samskaras, specific points about why to do samskaras and then how to do, how important they are. You will find then in the Bhagavad Gita, is it chapter 16, the first purport, and it's in the 7th chapter, 15th verse. It's also spoken about the importance of samskaras. So consider that and see it as you are doing it for the benefit of your children. Don't think much about yourself. For you, this is a duty. So if you see that these samskaras can help your children to benefit, so why not to do it? So I would like you to not think about it before you make some conclusions that they are all just nonsense and there is no need for it. So, yeah, that would be my request.
Thank you very much, Maharaj, for your valuable time and instructions that you've given. And thank you to all the devotees who attended. His Holiness Prithivardhana Swamiki, Jai. Thank you.
Hare Krishna.
Thank you to all the devotees for attending. If anyone's got any questions, I'll stay on the line for a little bit longer. And if anyone would like to give a donation to contribute to the Bhaktivedanta Academy, I've sent out some details, but if you didn't receive them, please let me know and I can send them on to you, or you can contact Krishnakirti Prabhu, Gurudas Prabhu, Tattvavada Prabhu.
Thank you very much for your service also.
No, thank you for attending, Maharaji. It's very nice to see you again.
Yeah, same. Okay. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna.